3, 2, 1.
Thank you, Matthew. It's Plaidchat Overwatch. It's episode 115. We're back. It's the three of us. 115. Yeah. We've done 100 and we've only done 114 episodes, but hopefully this one gets out to the people and then it's 115. Oh. Who knows? We might have to scrap it halfway through.
Why?
I don't know. If you keep talking too much.
It's because you keep calling the heroes agents.
that's an issue. All right. Here's my question, though. Why does each game have even different words for it? Why don't you just call them all characters? Why
nobody wants to copy names? Everybody else, so everybody comes up with like stupid words. I watched a two-hour video last night on the evolution of the Disney Fast Pass, and this happened with the Fast Pass in a lot of theme parks, because essentially it's just a Fast Pass, all these other theme parks, but they all came up with stupid names for them, like, you know, Express Plus, VIP. And like, yeah, VIP, wait lines, Ultimate like reservation access. Line. Yeah, it's just stupid. Just call it the Fast Pass. Like, if somebody comes up with a good idea, there's nothing wrong with, you know, kind of stealing it, right? Just doing it.
That is a quote from Matt. That's a wonderful quote.
What everybody does anyway. Look, if you don't steal it, somebody else is. So yeah,
that should be your slogan. Like, what? If you ever get like merch, Matt, Mr. X merch, just like print that on the top. Just like, it's fine to steal. Everyone does it or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Kids.
Like, that's brilliant. Yeah.
It's fine to take others' ideas. And if you ever feel threatened in a fight, always be the person that hits first. You have a big advantage if you throw first.
You can't tell me you've ever been in a fight.
No, but if I did, I would be throwing first.
You have the worst advice ever, man. The worst
I'm
advice.
I'm surprised you haven't been in a fight. I would have put money. Why would anybody fight me? 55% you'd been in a fight.
No. I'm so nice. Why would anybody fight me?
Because you're in New York. Like, a random person could just fight you. Like, the odds of you being in a fight are pretty high. I've been in a fight, you know. I was a kid, but still, like, it was a fight, you know. Like, have you never fought in like a schoolyard? Like,
yeah, but Jonathan, you're thinking about things the wrong way, mate. When people are the new kid in school, right? It's like when you join a prison. You're supposed to find the biggest guy you can and take him out. That's why you were targeted. Matt's tiny. No one views him as a threat. They're not going to go and fight him because he's just the chill, small guy in the corner with a beard.
You're saying, Johnny goes to me like, oh, well, what would you know about getting in a fight? Josh just compared it to prison. What does he know about going to prison? Have you ever been something you want to tell us, Josh?
No, I wouldn't last 2 seconds. I would not last a moment in prison. Now, I wanted to ask you, Matt, a question, though, because I know that we have been playing, or rather, when I say we, I mean just like Overwatch casters in general have been playing a lot of Halo. I saw Sony tweet about Halo. Jack's been playing a ton of Halo. Golden Boy's been playing Halo. You've been playing Halo. Bren's been playing Halo. The whole shebang. You entered a tournament recently with Custer, with Jaws, with Bren, the four squad. Did you represent Overwatch well?
So we lost in round one. well, hold on. It's double elim. They actually do the online tournaments double elim. So the team we lost to first actually ended up finishing top 16. Oh. So they were actually, like, and the games were, like, we definitely lost, but, like, there were moments where, like, you know, we were making some runs.
You got creamed in the first game from what I saw.
Yeah. We absolutely dunked on the kids in the first round of losers, though.
That's the only game I didn't see because I gave up on you after watching the first one.
And then the third round of losers, we lost, but it was pretty close. It's pretty difficult because the tournament starts at 9 a.m. West Coast. So Custa and Jack, we are getting up at basically 8 a.m. to start practicing, where I was just basically asleep.
If you're a viewer and you work a 9 till 5 and you wake up at those times anyway, just please be kind to Matt. He doesn't realize what it's like to be a normal person anymore.
Yeah.
He's been in esports for so long, waking up
at
4 p.m.
That's even the normal esports life. People play that early. True. Like, that, you know, if you go to a tournament, CSGO tournament, you know, you have to wake up at like 8 a.m., you know.
Yeah, but I'm old. It takes a while to get moving, you know. It takes a while to get moving.
I think your caffeine thingy capacity is like too high because you average like 4 cold brews a day. I think you need to look at yourself, Matt.
It might be it.
Intake.
True. But no, Halo's been a ton of fun. I think it it just shows, like, you know, a fun game everybody will come regardless of whether they played Halo before or not, right? Like, people gave it a chance because you just download it and you can play. There's no real barrier to
specifically free to play as well,
right? Yeah Good free system. To play, yeah,
good system.
I also would say Xbox Game Pass is pretty cool.
What?
So it's like $10 a month and you get all these different games. No, we're not, but I just think it's cool. And I think for like $14, you can actually play all the games in like the cloud. So like you could play, like if you have an Xbox controller, you can play Halo on like your phone or your iPad or something like that. So yeah, some cool shit going on.
What is this? What?
Yo, Xbox Live, bro. This is a throwback.
Wow. I mean, this is from so long
ago. I gotta
ago.
Tell you, it's such a mind trip.
NFL fever.
Yeah. I mean, they don't even make these games anymore. To see where online gaming is gone, as being like a console person, to start just really kind of my entire gaming career. I remember when like Xbox Live didn't exist. I mean, look at these graphics. They're just absolutely terrible.
Why is he stood up twisting his entire body to tackle?
Oh, his t-shirt says hustle.
That's amazing.
Dark Master.
Originally, so there was no Xbox Live when Halo 1 was out. The way you would have to play online is somebody made a program called Xbox Connect. So you would have to connect your Xbox to your Ethernet port on your computer. Your computer could then find like a list of like games going on, and you would click on one, and essentially it would like trick your Xbox into thinking you were system linked to that Xbox.
That's really clever.
Like routing through that. Yeah. So you could play online.
This is a true gamer den, by the way.
This is a gamer den, yeah.
If you live in a place like this in the year of our Lord 2021, you are just doing it wrong. You're 20 years out of date.
You are a gamer with a capital G.
Some people might be thinking, why are you talking about console shit constantly? This is an Overwatch podcast. The console side of Overwatch is really big, especially in North America. Has Overwatch ever released numbers about that, actually? Have they ever been public about like how big the console side is?
There are so many people though that play on console. I get tweets all the time when we're doing like OWL and during the OWL season of people who watch and play mostly on console. Like Overwatch has a huge console base, and I think sometimes people get forget that it's even like available on consoles. Like, because so many, like, obviously the competitive scene and everybody else attached to it is on PC, but so consoles in North America are just massive. And then I think with just everything going on with some of the cloud gaming stuff, which is getting like way better, where it's even moving past consoles, where people are able to play on any screen, just more ways people can play, and accessibility for people, I think, is great to see. And if consoles do that, that's awesome, because it just means more people playing.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the Overwatch stuff, though, because I want to start out with a little tasty rumor, some juice that's going around the subreddit at the moment, that there seems to be certain content creators, not us, we weren't asked, that were consulted or brought in or maybe just showcased some version of Overwatch 2. Now, Matt's just sipping on his cold brew, but I'm not even going to get opinions from Matt for this, because this little bearded man knows too much, and he's just going to lead us down the dark path of doubt and speculation. So I'm going to ask Jonathan, what do you think is going on here? It seems like the creators are under NDAs. That's what Fredo said. What do you think is actually going on with these content creators and Team 4?
I was traveling on this day the video was released, Josh. You brought this up.
I didn't watch
the
video
I've
never either,
seen it.
Mate. I didn't watch the video. The point of the video,
you
though,
watch
is basically
it live on the show. No, I'm kidding.
I mean, I think it was just some creators were in a call with Team 4, right? And they haven't been specific about why or for what purpose. No,
but that's good though. I mean, all I can say is I think that's really good. I mean, we always talk about this on this podcast, like pro players, community members, streamers, like God bless the streamers who actually play Overwatch these days and stream Overwatch, because it's a
The hard life out there. It's tough.
Like, because they're not getting a lot of like goodies compared to all these other streamers, like skin drops and like beta keys and like.
Jonathan, what is going on with your camera? You are just.
I mean,
you are 5 pixels per square inch.
Now we know just the what's going to be the thumbnail for me this episode, Kurt. Don't we?
Oh, it's back. There we go.
But yeah, no, this is really good. So, you know, even if we might not get all the, you know, shimmering details and inside scoops and all that.
Shimmering details.
Yeah, like, it's fine. I'm just happy that there's some communication between the community members, streamers, content creators, and the actual developers. So, yeah, great stuff. Now, someone say something, and I'll read the Reddit comments on
this. I agree. I think just more communication with as Reinforced Now does his research.
You brought this up impromptu. I made the show and then you just threw this in.
No, I did. I threw it in, Jonathan.
I think is good in any regard. I think that's something that Overwatch creators have just been asking for a while. And I know Andy's been vocal on the forums and stuff. Recently, you know, Jody is like a new CM, so just getting more creators and more of the community involved regularly, I think it's just good for the game overall.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they were asking about, because where I'm confused about Overwatch 2 is I really don't understand what stage the development is at all. The stuff that we saw, it felt like they had certainly made some serious shifts and they were changing up what was going on. And then some of the stuff that that's been talked about and some of the stuff that's been described by, you know, Andy B and that kind of stuff seems to be that there are still major, major, major decisions in terms of balance and hero redesigns and stuff like that to be done still. So I'm just interested to what degree they were interested in feedback. Flats was apparently on stream asking for big picture topics from his chat, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what the developers were looking for.
Yeah, so it seems like the content creators are like putting together their own changes, right? Is that the idea we're getting here? And then like suggesting them to the developers or like maybe doing some kind of experimental patch like
possibly
that. That is what I gather from not having watched videos. That the developers reached out and was like, hey, do we want to do some patch? And like, that's why the content creators have been tweeting about changes and stuff they want to do like that. That makes me a bit upset, because then I realized, why didn't they reach out to us? Patch chat, you know?
Because you didn't get your fucking camera ideas right.
Me and you look Matt, like that.
Because you look like that.
What is going on?
You look like Shrek.
Yeah.
Well, I don't understand why. I don't even understand how
this happened. Because if they went to make content, you just look like a pixelated. Just you look like your face is falling off.
You look like a picture of yourself.
It looks like you're about to just rip your face off.
You look like you're part of the hit movie Face Off.
Nicolas Cage and John Travolta, right?
Yeah, two of the greatest actors of our time. Either that or you've had a very, very bad suntan or something, and you've only applied sun cream in certain areas, and so your face is super patchy.
Anyway, me and Matt, we have tons of great ideas. Just ask us. Reach out to us.
Well, they did.
Matt literally like works for the company. So he's
they did for the last this, April, but the April Fool's patch or something had Reaper being able to fly. It was pretty close to being like a PlatChat patch this April. And so, you know, maybe
that was the closest we'll get to our patch.
Reaper can fly.
Is April Fool's.
Yeah, I think it is. All right. The next thing that was going on, Vancouver Titans. Their starting five, is it worthy of breadsticks? Would you give this team the metaphorical breadstick for what they've been able to accomplish over this offseason? They're a team that's trying to take their reputation from being a bit of a joke ever since they lost the Runaway Squad to actually turning into a competitive team next year. And they've signed some talent that people are pretty excited about. But when you look at the roster as a whole, how good do you think this ends up being?
I think they have potential.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how well they'll stack up against like some of the other you know, teams that we think are going to be the best in North America. But like, in terms of like talent and young talent that can like evolve and grow, I think they have a really good starting point.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I mean, they're picking up Falls, who, you know, used to be on Maryville, and I think there's some good talent there to be a good tank for this team. But if you look at the rest of the team, I mean, you got some veterans. So like Massa, he always finds himself being a competitive player on like some of the better teams in Overwatch, whether it was like Gigante before Atlanta Reign, Aspire and Shockwave. I mean, they're two great DPS players, quite frankly, that we all three of us would have liked to see in the league moving forward. So, I mean, great DPS pickups, and then Aztec from Throw the Defiant. I think overall, like, it's quite apparent that they're not going for the trophy, right? Like, they're not trying to win the championship. They're still the Vancouver Titans. But there's way more talent on this squad than last year's version of Warlock.
At least you have... At least you have the hope of heading in the right direction now. Like, you were just like I feel like for the last like 2 years or so, you were just kind of existing. And it was like, you knew a lot of those players weren't going to be around like very long. To where now you look at like at least Aspire, Shockwave, and Falls, you think those are going to be players that like you can build around, right?
Yeah.
You can wait a little bit longer to pick up other players. I think there's been kind of like a hold on like main supports, people picking up those, but like,
well, they actually do have a really good main support as well.
Yeah, I mean, you have Massa, right? I mean, you have the makings of a team that, like, could this be like you know, this year's Paris Eternal? I could see something like that.
I think that's, you know,
maybe they're not.
That's a pretty reasonable comparison, I think, because my issue with hyping this team up too much is, even though I like the talent that they've signed, they have to be measured against the competition, right? Like, they're not playing in a vacuum. They're not playing against their last year's team. And that means that even though this team looks pretty decent, there's a lot of teams that look even better than them. But I could definitely see them having some kind of Paris performance where they go like even on the season, people think
that, a little bit above 500, and you know, they get a few upset wins. 500 against top is hard, teams.
Matt. I'm just saying 500 is hard.
I don't think you should expect them to go 500, but if they have a schedule that's as easy as this year's Paris, then I think you expect them to go 500. Yeah, I mean, you're laughing, but I genuinely mean it. I mean, like, they're a team that if the schedule is right or if the timing is right, they can get those wins that they need to be able to have a decent season. That's how I think about this team. It's a bit like that.
Yeah.
I also I like the idea of having the DPS core, like, you know, Aspire and Shockwave. I like that they're you know, younger, a little bit hungrier players, because with such a large shift in how the game is going to work and, you know, everything along those lines, like, you need players who are going to grind and like play as much as possible. And I feel like those two are going to put in an insane amount of time where they could, you saw what Aspire did in the short amount of time in the league last year, right? Like, just kind of coming in mid season where it didn't even seem like Toronto was in a great spot just in terms of you know, how the team was getting along. And Shockwave, I think, had a little bit of a rough time with Philly just because they never really got everybody together. To where I think those two as a duo could really be standout.
Yeah. And as you pointed out as well, Matt, like, I think this is something to build upon, you know? Like, last year with Vancouver Titans, like, it pretty much felt a bit dead in the water, not to be too harsh, but it's like one player wouldn't have made a huge difference. Even two players wouldn't have made a huge difference on that Vancouver Titans team to make them like vastly better. Like, even challenging Toronto Defiant, Boston Uprising, those kind of teams, you needed a big overhaul. But with this squad, at least there is that potential. There are those younger players on this squad, like we've just mentioned. So even like a new tank pickup, like if you're one of the main tank for this team, to play some of the heroes that maybe are lacking in this squad, picking up a different third DPS option for maybe some flex play or some more projectile oriented stuff. Like, I think this squad at least has the potential to even improve upon throughout the season and get some of those wins. And I think that's really important going into Overwatch 2 as well.
Yeah. It's kind of The Vancouver approach seems to me from the outside to be what I was suggesting at the beginning of the season, which was play it a bit cautious, pick up talents that aren't, you know, God tier superstar breaking the bank talents. They're upcoming players. You have a fairly small roster to begin with, and then you add in pieces as they become standout from tier two. That to me seems like a pretty safe way of doing the season. If you're kind of on the fence about whether to invest super heavily in Overwatch 2, I think that would be a pretty reasonable way of doing things. The argument against it is, well, then all the good talent will be gone and you won't have anyone to sign mid-season. But I just don't really believe that. I think Overwatch 2, as long as it's sufficiently different to Overwatch 1, there are going to be breakout players that, like, within the first 6 months, a year, as long as somebody in Contenders has access to the game, they're going to be able to prove themselves.
Look at so many players, like, through Valorant through the year have, like, come up. Even Halo, it's such a new game, but so many like players who were never really big in other ones are like coming out and playing at the highest level. Like a new game opens the door for so many other people who,
yeah,
maybe they didn't put as much time into the last one. Maybe they liked it a little bit, but then, you know, went away from it, now come back. It also opens the door for like players who potentially want to return, right? Players who, like somebody like Sherfor, right, who got burnt out in the past. Like maybe he comes back, plays, and is like, oh, you know what?
That rumor is wild.
Maybe I'll go back, but what?
That rumor is wild, dude.
What? I don't think he comes back, but there's like...
Was it have I been baited?
I mean, I didn't see anything, but I'm interested I'm interested if you did. We've discussed previously on the show that Sherfor's the kind of player that would probably be really good in Overwatch 2 if the game was different, because as long as he's invested in it and wanted to go pro within the first season, he'd probably be a top player again, because he's got all the talent you absolutely need. And he has a lot of experience, and he was really good at the beginning of the game, just kind of the understanding and picking stuff up really quickly. What have you read?
Yeah, I don't know what Johnny's read.
Hold on.
Johnny's just making up rumors now.
Did someone just act like they were
Sherfor's recently been playing Halo. Have you got mixed up with that?
Yeah, he's been playing a ton of Halo.
Did someone just act like there were Halo thoughts on Twitter and just baited? I thought I saw a tweet from him that he was going to pick up by the Valiant, but that was obviously just fake then.
The Valiant picking up Sherfor?
No way.
I swear to God, someone acted like they were Halo of Thoughts then or something. Because I saw that tweet.
Sherfor.
Bro,
was this a dream or something? Tweet. Did I dream this?
You dreamt it.
You're off the goop. You are just...
Dude, even if you saw that, even if that was real right now, even if you find it and it's real, I still don't believe it. The LA Valiant have not been splashing the cash. Sherfor's doing really well as a content creator, isn't he? Like, and he's got a big name.
No. That was the replies and everything, and I didn't believe it. But I swear, I saw a tweet, and someone just like faking to be here.
This is what happens. Like, Johnny takes a leak and goes into the rainforest with Brent and smokes the magic frog and comes out thinking Sherfor.
Oh, bro, dude, I was out in Maine, just like, it was rainy, it was nature, it was wonderful.
It was nature.
It was actual like humidity. It was glorious.
So
I think if Sherfor were to come back and play, which I think I would put that as like a 5, maybe even lower percent, I do not think
I didn't say I believed it. I just said it was a wild rumor, but now I guess it's not a rumor even to begin with.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you've started one right now. That's what you've done.
You effectively just did that.
I mean,
just before we move on from the Vancouver topic, I want one more thought from both of you, which is, given what we know of the current teams, where do you think they would rank overall, super high level? Give me like a rough estimate, because I'm thinking from the bottom up, because this team, you'd have to go down quite a lot if you started from the top, I think. But I'm starting from the bottom. They're probably better than like what London are putting together, would you say? What the Valiant would be putting together, maybe? What Paris are putting together? What do you think about this kind of thing? How far do they creep up the list?
That's really hard. I'll kick it off, Matt. I kind of agree that they might be better than London, but like I you know, their head coach as well. Like, I haven't really seen anything from, you know, Blobby really to inspire the level of confidence that I have in some of those European contenders coaches or, you know, who have been around, because all we've really seen from Blobby is that he's been on, you know, second wind, had decent success. And, you know, was on Vancouver Titans when they were shite. So I don't
wasn't
know
working
how much
with the best pieces on the Titans, though, was
it? No, yeah, sure. But I'm just saying, like, there's no, like, there's nothing to inspire confidence for me there. So right. I'm just judging the players. I still feel like I'd probably rate them in the bottom in the West, but I can see them, like, working themselves up that ranking.
How you mean far? Literally the bottom team in the West?
Okay, who else is it? Like, it's my question. London, Paris?
Florida, London, Paris, I think, would be down there.
I'd probably rate them higher than Florida based on the pickups. I mean, they got a bit of an experiment going on there with Gunba. But, you know.
See, this is the interesting question, because I think actually Florida has got a pretty similar approach to this season as Vancouver. They've picked up, you know, we still don't know who their second support is, right? I don't think they've picked up anyone else, Florida, to go along with Samajed. So but Florida has like a deeper roster. They've got two tanks, they've got three DPS, so they have like more of a well-rounded roster apart from the support. But I am not sure. I think they're pretty even, but I like the DPS talent on both, kind of. I'm excited for Hydron. I think he could be even better than like a Shockwave or an Aspire at his role at the hits stuff.
I like Aspire and Shockwave more.
Really? Okay.
Well, Hydron, I think, is, you know, they up throw them in sleeve, but I like them both better than Mirror and Checkmate.
Right. I think they're just gonna on average. Yeah.
I think they'll be better than probably like 4 to 5 teams in NA.
4 to 5?
You think they're gonna be like,
Matt, how many teams are they gonna be in LA?
In NA?
I think there are some teams that always just like fuck it up, even with the good rosters, and they're going to continue to just trend down that path.
Okay. And who, like, are they, Matt?
Like, I could totally see, like, if the Justice trade decay, like, they just Pepega around again and just like fuck it up.
You could see Washington being worse than Vancouver.
Yeah.
Without decay.
I think they could
an
just
assassin and Mag and Fury.
We said that last year. Man. We said that last year. We literally said the same thing last year.
They weren't the worst team. They had like
the Titans rolled out players, you know, from the beta. I mean, they were just, you know, I mean, they must have not had footage of like 5 years of the past Overwatch. But like, there are some teams in NA that they put together these rosters and they look good, but they never are able to figure it out. Where I think the Titans may have an opportunity to at least be on the same level as those teams.
I think it's very hard to say between Vancouver, between Florida, and maybe even Paris as well, considering that at the moment it's just Dan, right? Is their tank. Like the addition...
They brought Vistola back.
Oh, of course, they did bring Vistola back. Yeah, they forgot about that. Yeah,
Vistola back. Yeah,
But then Paris have picked up Glister as well, and I think Glister's better than Shockwave or Aspire. So, and then London, I would usually doubt London, but I actually have faith in Christopher much more than I have faith in Flubby. So it becomes very difficult, even though the Vancouver roster looks pretty decent. I think it becomes really difficult to justify ticking them up the ranks beyond. Yeah,
I also put faith in some, like, in teams having some of these younger players, because like the older players, you know, they hate change with all of the change coming and then having to like grind it, and these like 18-year-old kids playing like 20 hours a day. Like, there's gonna be some older players who just are not, either don't put in the time to learn the new game, or just kind of think that their older skills will just kind of carry them through that.
Think there will be some players who are just like, yeah, oh fuck, you know, like,
yeah, some players will be like, oh, I didn't realize it was this much change.
yeah Okay, well, I just thought that was an interesting thought experiment. Anyway, let's move on to our next topic. So there wasn't too much news this week, but what there was was a lot of different free agents still floating around the scene. Last week, I think it was last week when we talked about some of the different free agents who were available and where they were going and that kind of stuff. And Connor at some point had been talking about, you know, Moth still not having notable offers. So we want to do a cop or drop notable free agents. So the idea here...
Does this name make sense?
What, sorry?
Does this name make sense, by the way? I just made it up.
Kind of. I'll explain the concept.
If you hate this segment, write in the comments, Johnny made it.
So Jonathan's essentially given us a team and two players. And the idea is, which one would you go for, or neither of them, I suppose?
No, you have to pick one.
Oh, you have to pick one?
You have to pick one.
All right. Okay. I didn't make the rules. I'm just, okay. I don't shoot the messenger. Okay.
You get shot if you don't pick. That's how it goes.
Okay? Oh, we get shot. Okay.
Yeah, you get if you don't pick one, would you rather have one of these two players or get shot? That's your... That's
that
your
is, that is a lot of violence.
That's a huge amount of violence. That's a threat. That's a threat against my life. The first one is Florida Mayhem, Moth, or Jexer. So Florida Mayhem only have Sermaged at the moment. Do you go for Moth, legendary main support, player for San Francisco Shock, also pretty flexible to some degree, able to pick up some of the flex support roles when required in the past, or Jexer, the guy that played for, who did he originally play for in the league? Did he join Houston first, or was he on Seoul originally?
It was Seoul then Houston, right?
I think so, yeah. But now I'm doubting that. I feel like he'd never actually played for Seoul, but I can't recall.
Seoul and Houston.
I swear he played for Seoul. Yeah, he did play for Seoul.
Sorry, my brain stopped working.
I mixed him up to you.
The Element Mystic player that went over to Seoul and then Houston and then Dallas and was one of the best main supporters last season. He was pretty decent. Who do you go for, Matt?
I am going to say I would go with Moth looking at this roster. I think there is just a lot of new players to the league and inexperience that I do think having, you know, Gunba with somebody like Moth, who's like been there before, can definitely help guide these players in the right direction throughout a year where we've seen Jexer be good, but obviously he was good with the Dallas Fuel where they had so much talent, like an abundance of talent, where we've kind of seen him not really be that great, whether it's Houston or Seoul. So I'd take Moth. It's like a bit of a safer pick.
Mm.
Interesting.
What's your thought process here, Jonathan?
Well, I mean, one of the main reasons why Moth didn't see playtime in the first place was because Skewed was so damn good for the Gladiators, right? Like, sure. I think Moth was probably supposed to be the main support like most of the time for the Gladiators. And I think we saw that early on as well before we really acknowledged like how good Skewed was on Brig and even some of the flex support lineups. The flex support lineups, double flex support lineups, weren't even that prevalent at the start of the season. It was really later on that we saw more of the, you know, Senyata main support kind of stuff to deal with some of the shield compositions and stuff like that. You know, counter Atlanta Rain, etc., stuff like that. So I think Moth got kind of phased out from the LA Gladiators because of how good Skewed was, which we didn't expect going into the season. At the same time, I mean, I also get the argument for like Jexer here, you know, like he's a great Lucio. You know, he played in the Overwatch League finals this past year and now he's without a team, but you know, he was on the best North American roster for a very long time and he can bring those ideas to a team like the Florida Mayhem, bringing tons of youth talent, inexperienced players. You know, Jexer, he can come into this team and really like provide those ideas. I'm not saying Moth can't either, you know, obviously he's a back-to-back champion, but Jexer, you know, he's been at that top tier level very recently, so he can bring that to this team. You know, for the Mayhem, you got two Koreans on this roster as well, and Jexer could be like, you know, an in between. I think it's kind of close between the two of them, but I would also go with Moth here, I think.
Okay,
instead of
here's where my head goes though, is that Florida have been trying to go the cheaper, like diamond in the rough route, the Moneyball-esque approach to this season, right? Moneyball or balling out of control if you end up paying for Moth's salary, or possibly Jex's as well. I would imagine both of these players came into this offseason probably asking for a fair old chunk of change because of the teams that they've played on in the past and because of the experience they bring to the table and because they're some of the best free agent main supports. Now, probably their market valuation has ended up having to decrease because people aren't as interested in main supports for starters heading into Overwatch 2 by the look of it. And they have other reasons why their value might have dropped. For example, Moth getting benched towards the end of the season and Jax are getting let go from the Dallas Fuel and people probably wondering why that was the case if they did so well with him. I don't know who you could get for cheaper. If Gunba came to the negotiation table and said, listen, I've got to go home with the main support, but I'm going home with whoever's cheaper. Who do you think he picks up between Moth and Jaxa? I don't really know. I think probably Jaxa. I think there might be more teams interested in Moth in the long run. I think Moth's market price may end up still being a little higher.
I don't know if Moth can do that after he just didn't play. He just didn't play for the whole year, pretty much.
Yeah.
And then especially, like, I think what kind of hurts both players is that a lot of teams are opting to have kind of like, it seems that the thinking is the main support role is basically just Lucio at this point. And like,
yeah, unless you can gift angelic blessings to people with that, the rumored tweet that we were looking at previously.
Sure. Yeah. But like, if that's not the case, well, you know, their market may not be that good. Just
that's why
overall,
I would rather pick up Moth. I feel like Moth is the more flexible player of the two. But at the end of the day, that should drive Jax's price down, no? Because if he's less sought after, he's probably the one that Florida Mayhem would be more inclined to grab because they'd be a better bang for your buck. I'm thinking about bang for the buck. And I feel like Jaxa's buck might be lower and his bang's still all right.
No, I think if you're Jaxa, you played on a team that was really successful last year. You played a big role. You probably have a little bit more sway in where you can go and maybe end up being a Lucio for like a top team, right? Where I think Moth kind of has to rebuild his stock a little bit play again. I think, you know, if I was a coach, I would want to see Moth play a significant amount again before trying to offer him like something massive, right? So I imagine that's kind of where a lot of other people are at.
I also think Moth deserves a higher salary. I mean, obviously, I don't know what Jax says, you know, his goals are, like how much he want to play for an Overwatch League team. Similarly, I don't really know what Moth wants either, but I think that Jaxa probably goes a little bit cheaper if you're simply looking at the contracts between these two. I think that, you know, one of the big things as well is that Moth, by all accounts, is a fantastic teammate and a great leader. Whereas, you know, does Jaxa have that kind of reputation between all the Overwatch League teams, the general managers and the coaches? I think
to some degree, I think. I mean, he originally did. He originally had a really high reputation as being like a shot caller that could call in English and Korean. And other stuff. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I've said countless times on the podcast that you know, he's been super nice to me too, and you know, like always happy. And even though he apologizes on Twitter all the time, like he's a very, you know, happy, easygoing guy. Always, you know, laughing, having fun. I just think that Moth brings this different kind of like calmness to the in-game stuff, and that's what we heard from teams like the Gladiators, like Space. You know, he was on Backchat and he talked about how Moth brings this calmness to the LA Gladiators that like really composes the team in critical moments. I think that Moth has that reputation still while being a top tier main support.
Sure,
so
sure.
I think that Moth in that regard, like he, you know, you get a little bit more for a little bit more money. And if that is what Florida Mayhem wants to go with, then, you know, maybe you want to spend that money. But I think between these two, you probably want Moth if you're Florida Mayhem, but I think that Jaxa is a great picker for this.
What if they made a deal with Moth to become a player coach and then get another flex support and he can kind of be like almost Jake-esque?
The Jake pickup? I don't know, man. I don't know about that. I had my reservations about that at the beginning of the season with the Houston Outlaws. And even though it worked out, I'm not convinced that it's the best setup for all teams. It just seems a bit weird to me.
Yeah, let's stay away from that, shall
okay,
we?
Okay, let's move on to the next team, though. I want to talk about the Guangzhou Charge. This is Jonathan's next question here is, Guangzhou, do they choose Sanguinar or Jexa? And we're frankly, I think you might be a little off the goop here. I'm going to go first, Jonathan, because if you're comparing Moth to Jexa, and then you're comparing Jexa to Sanguinar, that's like you're taking some fucking leaps down the chain, are you not? Because the transitive property kind of implies that you think Jexa's comparable to both Moth and Sanguinar. Which...
Yeah, what's the next one? Is it who should Boston grab, Jexa or Freefeel? How far are we going?
Hear me out.
Or Jexa?
I am being a bit cheeky with this one, okay? I'm being a bit cheeky, having a bit of fun with this one straight after the Moth and Jexa one. Here's the thing, though. Going into Overwatch 2, Jexa, he's by no means old, okay? I think Jexa's like 22 years old. But you know, he's not 18 anymore. neither am I, God knows. But Sanguinar... 19 turns 20 in December, so he's, you know, got 2 years on him. Which 2 years? I mean, that's a decent amount.
I mean, you know, at the end of the day, though. At the end of the day, it doesn't.
Go on. Also, my other argument is Sanguinar. When you think of Sanguinar, you think about Lonald Spitfire. You know, an awful season in APAC in season 3 during COVID. Just fucking shit on the walls. It was god awful. but he's been an O2 blast. He's had a good run in Overwatch contenders this past year, and he's been improving. So maybe you want to go for the younger talent if you're going to a charge. Maybe there's something about, you know, building up Sanguinar, he has a good gear, can sell him off to one of the other Korean or even Chinese teams, maybe. You know, like maybe there's some young gun.
I want to say Sanguinar because I think you've sold me on it, but I do get a little bit of a Yakpung vibes where, you know, he goes down to contenders, looks good, comes back, and but it's the same old song and dance.
Here's the thing. The reason that anyone even talks about age in esports is only because it tends to correlate with how much free time and dedication you have. That's the only reason it's important.
It's true, though.
But it does, in a general sense, it doesn't apply to every specific case. You can't look at Jexa, who's 22, and say, probably don't give a shit anymore. Probably Sanguinar. No,
did I say that?
More.
I didn't say that.
But that's the implication when you talk about age, because otherwise, a 22-year-old is perfectly capable of playing at the top level for years and years and years. All it comes down to is their dedication, how much time they're willing to invest, how dedicated they are to winning next year, how willing they are to be able to pick up new heroes, that kind of thing. So just saying 19v22, there's no advantage to picking up the younger player unless you've already talked to them and they follow that correlation. So I think the only advantage would be if you think Sanguinar could be more flexible than Jexa. To me, the biggest argument for Sanguinar is the argument, again, for Moth that I was bringing up, that the guy can play some other stuff too. Jexa, when I think of Jexa, I think about a very hard main support player, a Mercy player, a Lucio player, a Brig at a fucking pinch. He's had some good moments on Brig before, but he's not the best Brig in the world. That's where I think he firmly sits. Is he willing to expand his hero pool outside of that? Is Sanguinar willing to expand much deeper into the flex support role? I think that's what decides it much more than, is he under the age of 20?
Okay, the age point is not moot, though. It's not moot, in my opinion. Like, it's not irrelevant.
It's a heuristic for dedication. It's not.
I don't know
it's
what heuristic means.
It just means would say this.
European?
I actually think the biggest thing for me would be, would Jexa even want to play for Guangzhou? I mean, this team is not
That's
one
not
that
the
looks
fucking
like
game, is it?
I mean, yeah, it kind but, of is. But if you give an offer to both of these guys and Jexa declines, you haven't won.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're looking at this roster, if you're Jexa, you're like, oh, can we win? Like, do you want to go join a team that can't win? So I would say they should just go after Sanguinar, just build some fucking, just grab some young guys who could be good or could be bad and go for it.
This is not what I envisioned when I made this game.
Okay, that's a realistic scenario.
My game was both of these players, they knock on the fucking team house. It's like minus 20 degrees Celsius. It's snowing. It's storming outside.
They brought their fucking, one of them to die in the blizzard.
Yeah.
They're both, you only have one bed available. and no floor space for some kind of reason. Which of the two do you pick up for the team house? That was the game when I made it.
Your game is way worse.
And now you ruined
it
with your vague rules. And just...
Your game was, who should we sacrifice into a storm?
It'd be a great Netflix show.
Yeah, let's do the next one. Should the Valiant grab Dia or Decay? I'm sure they would love to have Decay, but Decay ain't going, so they'll take Dia. I mean, with the Guangzhou Charge would probably love to have Li Jie gone, but he's not going to sign there. So, you know, Sanguinar it is.
All right. Let's talk the next one. This is Jonathan's again. Vancouver.
Yeah. You don't need to mention me.
Oh, no, I'm going to mention you every time. Vancouver, Ardo or EQO? I like this one as well because they've got kind of similar names, you know? It's vowel, consonant, vowel if you're playing on Countdown.
Who was the best name? Is that one of your factors going into this one?
No, this is not one of my factors.
Okay.
I want to see Otto back in the league because I like Otto and I feel like he got just shitty goes at the beginning of it. I would probably say EQO here.
Oh, I mean, I think you're crazy if you pick Otto over EQO.
Yeah.
Even if you think EQO's stock has dropped massively since season one or whatever, and he's no longer, you know, the team leader, Genji player, destroying everybody, the guy's still been doing well. He's been picking up new heroes, and he's got a lot more experience in much better teams than Otto does. I think this is a slam dunk. Pick up Otto. Pick up EQO. Fucking hell. Pick up EQO. I think EQO, even his hero pool fits with this team better as well.
He can play Brig and shit, right? We've seen him do that.
Yes, but that's not quite why I'd pick him up. But
get him first Brig.
Give me the argument for Otto, Jonathan. You have to argue for Otto because you put him in this.
He's a nice guy.
I don't have to. I was going to say I'd pick EQO as well. But I mean, these are the names floating around, and I mean, I think. I don't think it's a slam dunk. I think it's more like a layup, you know. Like I think Otto is still playing for Talon in contenders. You know, he's had a good run there. I mean, some of the players on like O2 Blast, Talon Esports, like these are great players, you know, with potential that could come into the Overwatch League and have some of these renaissances. Like Sanguinar, Otto. These are names that generally has had a pretty bad reputation for their gameplay in the Overwatch League. But the fact of the matter is, like, some of these guys, they have gone down to tier 2. They have improved. New York Excelsior, last year, they picked up some of these talents we've seen around the league to give them a second go, like Yakpeng. Now, he didn't have the best year either, but there is chance for redemption. Like, Kalios. Kalios was a great pickup for New York, I think. They had tank struggles throughout the entire season, picked up Kalios, and it really helped that team out.
Let's watch how we use the word great.
It was an improvement. Let's put it like that. Yeah. It was an improvement. I find it hard to remember everybody that's gone down to contenders and back into the Overwatch League. I feel like it's more common for those people to not have done massively better. But
what about
the reason is you tend to think of the ones that did do massively better, like Rascal, Fearless? Like Fearless, right? Those are the big, big ones that like dropped down to contenders, came back. Holy shit, they blow people away. But you've got quite a number of people that have gone down to contenders, come back in and looked pretty much exactly the same, no?
Sure, but I think it also, it's one of those things where it's like, you mentioned this earlier, you know, about Flubby on Vancouver Titans. It's about the situation as well for the players, you know, coming into the Overwatch League. For example, like Yakpeng on Turn to Defiant, awful
Stop
situation.
Using Yakpeng as an example, man. Never, you will improve your argument so much if you give up using Yakpeng.
I mean, I'll have to go browse the computer. You're forcing me to come up with this.
What about
just use Rascal, mate? Just use Rascal. He's right there.
Yeah. What about Otto to Florida?
Why? They already have 3 DPS. Why would they need Otto?
No, Checkmate is going to go back to tank. Checkmate's going to play tank.
No, he's not.
Checkmate's going to bring him back.
I'll strangle Avast if that happens.
Otto on Washington was a pretty shit experience for him. So I don't want to count him out. Sanguinar on London Spitfire, pretty awful experience. Like some of these players have had awful experiences. Going to a new team can really rejuvenate.
What about Otto on the Valiant?
Something like that. So Valiant doesn't have anyone. They pick up anyone. Just pick up anyone, literally anyone. They need players.
Yeah.
I was going to include Philly and New York in some of these examples, but like if Philly, they have like 3 DPS players. They could use a tank. They could use a support. So could New York. They have Flora. That's it. You know, there's no, what's the argument? So, you know, you can't, Valiant.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to the next one. It's again with Vancouver. And this time the question is, should the Vancouver Titans choose Jungu or Sado? And that is, I mean, those are pretty premium options, I'm not gonna lie, for a team like the Titans. These would be big pickups. Like, I think they'd go pretty well with the people that they have on the roster. I mean, at the moment it's only false. I swear there was a rumor that they were gonna pick up Iron or something as well. Wasn't there? But maybe I just made that up or mixed them up with another team. I don't know. That was the rumor, but no announcement.
I would say Sado. We've seen Sado over.
I think it's got an extra G or an extra U or something. Yeah. Kurt. An extra G.
We've seen Sado play extremely well over time. We've seen him also improve over time, Sado. As time has gone on, I think last year was just a bit of a weird year with Toronto, or if you look at like some of his performances on Philly, I know a lot of us, even when we were talking on this show, were like, why did Philly let him go bring in Mono? They brought in Miro. That would have been just
that would have been incredible.
If they would have dropped Sato for Miro, that would have been a fucking blockbuster of an episode. I think Sato still has a lot to offer a team, and I think he is a player who is so mechanically skilled that he'll be able to pick up whatever it needs to do.
Yeah, I'm inclined to go in the same direction with Sato, but I want to offer another different reason as well. I think Jungu looked like a great player who I would love to be picked up by a team and thoroughly developed this year. But I would be inclined to suggest Jungu go to a full Korean team, because I believe from talking, I think this was in some like interview with the Houston players or something. I can't remember where I heard this, but we had been having kind of conversations with the casters and the analysts about what is this rotation? What does it mean between Dreamer and Jungu on the Houston Outlaws last year? The year that was just played. And what I heard recently, and fuck me, I can't remember where it was that Dreamer was brought in mainly because of his experience speaking English on English-speaking rosters. And it wasn't necessarily because of hero pools or skill level, although perhaps those played a component, but I think it was primarily because of communication. And that, I think, would continue to be an issue on Vancouver because of how varied their roster is. They have a varied roster of people that have played small amounts of experience with other, like, very mixed language rosters before as well, right? They have... Actually... They have pretty decent levels of experience, I would say, apart from False, you could argue. Because Aspire played on like a full Korean team at times when he was playing. Like, he was the only player that was communicating in English sometimes. Aztac, to some degree, was playing on a roster that was integrating European players, because they played with the other guys too. And then Mass has definitely played on mixed language rosters before. So maybe it's not less of an issue than I thought it was going to be. But I think I'd be inclined to pick up Sado for that reason. Because Jungu, to me, if you had to pick up a secondary main tank mid-season to support Jungu, doesn't doesn't seem like this would be the place to continue his development into a top tier tank.
Yeah, I think for him personally, I'd agree with you. I think that makes more sense for him as a player. I think Django, though, like, he has that interesting potential. Like you said, like, he could go to a different team and, like, really develop as a player and really come out, like, way better, more versatile, great impact player on a lot of different teams. But I do think that it's interesting in the case of Vancouver Titans, like, how much are they going to rely on Falls for that tank role? And obviously, you want to know, like, how main tank, off tank looks like, how that looks like in Overwatch 2. Can you get away just playing an off tank most of the time? Do you need a main tank to be able to come in and flex to all these different, like, Orisa, Reinhardt all the time, like, consistently? We don't know what that is, what that is going to look like. But between these two players, I think that Sado is probably, like, the more versatile one, like, has, you know, great Winston, had a great Reinhardt season, can play a lot of different stuff. But I could almost see, like, Vancouver Titans also go in a different direction where they're just going to rely on Falls, like, a lot of the time, when it comes down to their strategies, how they want to play. I think Falls is a very interesting prospect getting into the Overwatch League. And so, like, maybe you want Django to be, like, a solid rock, like, when you need that Reinhardt. Maybe when you need, like, Wrecking Ball, for example. I'm not saying Sado can't do that. I think, you know, Sado can play all the main tanks at a very respectable level. But I think that Django, like, knowing how good he is on Reinhardt, how he played Reinhardt against some of the best Reinhardts in the league this past year, I think that he's a great specialist to bring in to a team like the Vancouver Titans, if you want to rely on your off-tank most of the time, but need to cover your bases. If you need a Reinhardt, I think Django is a fantastic player and option to pick up for this team. If you need, you know, a Wrecking Ball player, I think that Django can fulfill that role as well. Whereas I view Sado as a more, like, versatile option. So it depends on who wants to go with. I think both options are, like, really good, but I think I'd love to see actually Django on this team. I think that would be really interesting.
What do you think? Okay, let's say... I personally think, though, that this question might even be a bit too... The player quality might be a bit too high for Vancouver to get snap-up players of this caliber.
They're free agents.
Oh, yeah, no, I know they're free agents, but, I mean, other teams might want Django or Sado, and it just hasn't been released or something yet. I'm just speculating here completely. But, for example... I don't think it's feasible to head into Overwatch 2 with only one tank on your roster. I don't think that makes sense because of the off tanks, all of the main tanks, and then any new ones that end up getting added to the game, if that even happens for this season. So when I'm thinking about, like, the teams that only have a solo main tank and they have actually announced players on their roster, the Seoul Dynasty and the bloody hell, San Francisco Shock. So Seoul have got Smurf and Shanghai have... Sorry, why do I keep saying Shanghai? San Francisco have got Super. To me, Django to Seoul would be so interesting, I feel, because he is a very flexible player that's good at a lot of stuff, more like DPS-y kind of picks as well. And he is... a very good Reinhardt player too. So he's got the Rein, he's got the ball, and he's got the more like DPS he picks too. That seems to synergize really nicely with what Smurf is going for. As long as Django is given time to be able to pick up some off-tank stuff as well, if that's in his wheelhouse. I'd be really interested to see whether that was feasible.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about this when I made this... you know, these options today. I was like, are some of these teams just, like, straight up going to rely on some of their DPS players to potentially fill in some of these, like, Zarya roles? Like, we saw Decay fill in and play Zarya.
That would be crazy.
One playoffs. That would be crazy, but I'm also like, I could see that being a reality, maybe like 2-3 years down the road, like once we've figured out Overwatch 2, how it plays. Maybe having great mechanics and, you know, picking up a bit of game sense for stuff like Zarya, maybe that is going to be a big difference maker when you're talking about some of these tank players. Like, maybe you need someone who's more defensively minded, knows how to play Orisa, shield management, stuff like that. But I could also see the case that, like, if you got great mechanics and you just, like, put in, like, 2 months of practice onto Saria and learn a little bit about that hero, like, how to, you know, hold the line and some of the movement required to play Saria compared to a DPS like McCree, like, I think that in Overwatch 2, with only one tank available and mechanics being so crucial, like, maybe that is what Overwatch 2 is about. So maybe some of these teams early, they're just like, well, you know, maybe we'll just have Prophet play Saria. Or Sigma is a bit of a stretch, but, you know. Or for the San Francisco Shock, like, they only have Super for now. Yeah. And God knows, he'll probably, you know, cover his spaces, because knowing him, he'll be able to play D.Va, Saria, those kind of heroes at a very high level already. But there are some interesting players in the league that, you know, I could potentially see them flex onto some of these DPS-ier tank heroes in the end. And maybe you don't need an off tank. Maybe you don't need a main tank. Or rely on them to the same degree, you know? So it's going to be interesting to see. Why am I green all of a sudden?
I don't know.
Why
your
am
camera's
I green?
Going crazy today. All right. The next one was San Francisco. Okay. So assuming San Francisco Shock do pick up somebody else to go alongside Super, do they go with Gargoyle or Gebulshi? So we've got off-tank free agents here. Gargoyle, Gebulshi.
If Connor was here, he didn't like Gargoyle. And I don't know why, but... you
Connor
know,
didn't like Gargoyle?
No, no. I think I've asked that, that he was like, no, Gargoyle shouldn't be in the league or something like that.
He said Gargoyle shouldn't be in the league.
When the fuck did he say that?
It had to be like, what, a few episodes ago? I was on it because I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, it was like he had a really bad season with the Florida Man. Don't rate Gargoyle.
I would grab Gargoyle here if I was the Shock. I think, what, like two seasons ago, we were looking at him as like a fantastic D.Va Sigma player.
Wasn't he in the MVP runnings for a while?
Played some Roadhog. What?
No? Or was that only Krong?
I think it may have only been Krong.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
But I just think he had a terrible year because Florida had a terrible year. He can never get on the same page with OG. It seemed to be a little bit of a mess. They had a tough schedule. I think he's a player that we've seen him have the talent that if there's any kind of group that could get it back out of him, it would be the Shock.
What do you think here, Josh?
I'm not sure. Gargoyle obviously had a terrible season, but I'm not inclined to blame it on Gargoyle. That's my thought process, because it's so much, I mean, Overwatch 1, God bless it, is so much about tank synergy. And especially at the pro level, what Mayhem were doing all year was pretty horrendous. But even at the beginning of the year, when they were getting some level of success, they were playing like Rein Sigma stuff, right? And they were still leaning into Gargoyle Sigma then. So to say that, I don't know. But when Gebulshi came in, he did look pretty decent, and he was playing on a fairly poor team too. I think this is a hard choice, mostly because we haven't seen either of them at their peaks recently. I think Gebulshi, you could argue, was closer to the peak, but even then, I think they were limited by what they were able to accomplish with Boston. And Boston itself was not really popping. They had some semi-decent results, but it's not like... I don't think the team was good enough for Gebulshi to be able to show the potential that they seemed like they had in Contenders. I'm trying to think as well, like, what would you even want this player to be filling? You have Super on your team, playing tank most of the time. What do you even want this player to... What qualities are you even looking for the second San Francisco tank?
Probably D.Va. I'd say D.Va is like the number one hero where you'd want someone to fill in.
In that case, probably Gebulshi then, because I don't think Gargoyle's D.Va was his best hero. I think he was better when he was playing Sigma.
Here, how I look at it is, I think I think Bolsey has more value right now. I think he's, you know, more valuable between the two of these players right now, especially considering Gorgol's season with the Florida Mayhem. I think that, you know, hurt his stock quite a bit. But for the San Francisco Shock, I mean, Gorgol has that, like, playmaking ability, some of that, like, you know, fuck you attitude. And I think that in the San Francisco Shock, we're like, they emphasize on, like, really pushing limits, being aggressive, stuff like that. I think I could also just see Krusty, like, coaching Gorgol into, like, a beast of a tank player to hold the front line for the San Francisco Shock. Like, if he wanted to come in on Sigma and, you know, have big impact, stuff like that. And I think Gorgol would actually, like, kind of fit into that system the way his play style is, as we've seen it in the Overwatch League, his carry performances for the Florida Mayhem. I think that'd be really interesting to see. But Gabe Bolsey, I look at more like Bolsey as like a, you know, like a very solid off-tank option, reliable. Like you mentioned, D.Va, like subbing in for some D.Va gameplay, and I think you'd be very confident knowing what he gives you in that role. But I think that Gorgol, while he had a bad season with the Florida Mayhem, I think that his playstyle is so much fun to watch, and I think it really go well with the San Francisco Shock. So I'd actually really enjoy seeing him on the Shock. So I'll pick Gorgol between the two of them.
I also have a hot take just in general for Overwatch 2, which is that I don't think being good at D.Va in Overwatch 1 is going to be the thing that translates to being good at D.Va in Overwatch 2, personally. Because from how the players were describing D.Va in Overwatch 2, it's not about being that pivot between the front line and the back line anymore so much as being a hard dive, like, in the faces of your opponent, disrupting them kind of character. At least that's how they were describing playing it during the Overwatch 2 playtest. All of that could change, obviously, but I feel like with only one tank on the board, you're much more likely to be trying to use her super offensively, like trying to help your team in dives, get in their faces, that kind of stuff, and use the defense matrix almost selfishly rather than in a peel-oriented way. And there's a lot of D.Vas that are very peel-oriented from Overwatch 1. And that just seems to me like, how is your team ever going to be able to make space if your D.Va player is still stuck in the mindset of Overwatch 1 peel for the backline duty? It just theoretically, I feel like that skill set is not going to translate.
Yeah, I mean, I think just a lot of the... I think it's just a lot of the tanks are going to be way more offensive oriented, where they're going to be, I mean, just kind of like they've said, just like large DPS, right?
Fat Genji.
Yeah, Fat Genji. I agree. I think that like those skills aren't exactly going to translate over as seamlessly as probably some people think.
There okay. You have it. Official juice from an Overwatch League employee. He quoted Math Mr. X.
All D.Va mains out of a job. Let's move on to our last and final one here in terms of our copper drop for the free agents. LA Gladiators. Okay. So the Los Angeles Gladiators currently, let me look up their roster. Who do they have currently at DPS? I've got a
They have Anz and Kevster.
Right, yeah. Fuck it, Al.
So I put Anz in there, even though he's on the roster already.
Yeah, you confused the shit out of me. Okay, so...
Because this one's a bit cheeky as well, because he's already on the roster.
All right, well, I'm gonna let you set this one up then. You've got to set this one up, because in what world are they choosing between Anz if he's already on the team? You've got to set this one up for me.
Okay, so obviously, I mean, it's just fun and games. There's no way they pick up Anz and then they drop him. So there's no world in which, like, this is an actual conversation in the office, you know? But it's a fun and games, you know? I think... Anz, you know, he's a bit Pine-ish at this point, where it's like Pine, it's like, oh my God, you know, God King Pine, you know, like he's amazing. Those eyes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Right now keep talking.
And Anz had like the most amazing season, you know, with the San Francisco Shock. He like peaked in all stats, number one, first elims, like always in a six versus a five advantage.
Yep.
Because of Anz and his early picks. Then of course he had to step away for a little bit, you know, mental health issues, didn't feel the best, and you know, good for him, I'm happy he did that. Felt like he was in a good enough place to come back in the league. did so, replaced Stryker on the San Francisco Shock once more. And I think overall, like, Ants has a great reputation for being a fantastic hitscan player. At the same token, Merritt is another young gun. You know, another...
Wait there. Before you move on to Merritt, I'm not letting you get away with calling Ants the new Pine. I mean, Pine...
I didn't say it was a new Pine. I said it was Pine-ish.
Pine... What does Pine-ish mean? Pine-ish? A fir tree is
maybe
Pine-ish.
Maybe his best season passed him. Maybe, you know, Ants, the way we remember him and his reputation... I don't know. Is it right to say it precedes him? No. I don't know what precedes him means.
Well, but that means that people, like, hear about your reputation before they see you because it's so big.
But my point is, like, is
the reputation's bigger than the
Gladiators? Is the Ants on the Gladiator in 2022, is that the same Ants that was on the San Francisco Shock during 2020 when he had that insane season?
Let me talk about the Pine thing first, though, because to me, it doesn't make sense to compare the two, because Pine was not even the best hit scan of 2018. He was perhaps the most talked about or the most hyped, but he wasn't the best hit scan of 2018. Yeah. He just had the flashiest plays. And even the flashy plays, they didn't actually result in his team getting wins all the time. I mean, his flashiest play when he went for those fucking Spider-Man plays and stuff at the end of the season were actively losing his team games. Whereas Ants, when he had his best season, did not have any of that. Like, he was just dominating. He wasn't 360 no-scoping people and, like, making highlight reels everywhere. And people are talking about him as the best because he's the flashiest. He just was the best. He dominated everyone he went up against. So I don't think the comparison is apt, but I understand what you're talking about in terms of maybe he's... You're essentially saying, is Ants washed? That's your question here.
No, not washed.
Not fully, but he's gone through... He's gone
don't
through the delicate.
Don't put words in my mouth, okay? And the reason I compared it to was maybe their best season has already been. I'm not saying they're washed up. I'm just saying that maybe this... The Ants in 2022, he's peaked. Maybe you're buying Ants on the downwards trajectory while you could pick up Merritt, a great new young talent with great contenders experience, and take a bet on him, you know?
Well, here's why I would still be confident in Ants. If you've spoken to the guy, trialed him, et cetera, because to me, the main factor that it comes down to is he joined the team halfway through the year and was not given that, like, long extended time to play with them preseason, to gel with them, to figure out his role, to that. And, like, over the course of that season that Ants was with them, he developed, got more and more playtime, built out his hero pool, played different things. I mean, at the beginning of the season, he wasn't playing a ton. And then he added more and more stuff to the point where he's playing Cassidy for them. He was playing long-range hitscan for them. He was playing some Tracer. He was playing, like, towards the end, he was even playing, like, Sombra and May for them. So that, to me, is, like, the evolution of a player that's become super ingrained with how the team works. Compare that to the season where he's just chucked in as Stryker leaves. Everything's still in flux there for him. It's not the same scenario where there's a stable thing around him. Plus, on top of that, we are about to become probably in the most long-range hitscan-dominated meta for, I don't know, probably
also
since.
Now you're fine making assumptions about Overwatch 2?
Okay, if Overwatch 2 somehow doesn't end up being dominated by long-range hitscan, I think the devs have done an incredible job. Because just from a theoretical point of view, it just seems impossible that long-range hitscan wouldn't be great. If there aren't two tanks... How is that not really good, having long-range hits?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
I am making an assumption there, but I feel like it's a relatively safe assumption to assume taking flanks, having more open sight lines, less shields in the way, less divas pressuring you, like that kind of thing should lend itself to a player like Ants finding opportunities. I think this, while I could be on board with saying that he's peaked, because that season from Ants was... like the actual best season we've ever seen from a hitscan player. So
yep.
I'd maybe even be on board of saying nobody's going to be able to be better than that next year. So Ants is probably not going to be able to either. But I still think I'd take Ants here.
Yeah, I would as well.
I'll take a merit. Okay. Champion of the contenders, people.
You really are. Yeah. You really are.
People are gonna this dumb game, dude. People are gonna, you know, roast me. But I'm doing this for the viewers, for the listeners.
Yeah.
This is the off season. Welcome. This is what it's gonna be like. Enjoy it.
I like it. Okay. Now we've got our final one that Jonathan added to the list. which is you have to choose Valorant Champions, Liquid or C9 Blue. Now why have you added this to our podcast, Jonathan? This is the wrong podcast. Promotion.
Plat chat, you know? Like, you know, I listen to the Ringer podcast and, you know, like there's some...
Who's gonna win, Josh? Like, you know?
Hey, like a cinema review of Dune, you know? Check out Dune. And then it's like, hey, Taylor Swift released a new album. It's like cross promotion, you know? We're doing some cross promotion on Plat chat.
Cross promotion. Okay, yeah. I like it. So if you're really bored in the off season and, you know, you've been watching old VODs on Custer's stream of Apex Season 1 and you've been hearing Jonathan say... Apex, we were the best in Apex. If you've been listening to that on repeat and that kind of stuff, and you know you want to check out another esport, then yeah, we have another podcast. It's called Plat Chat Valorant, and the Champions is going on at the moment. So it's like the Overwatch League Grand Finals, but for that. So we're doing a co-stream for it. You can find that at, or we might be doing a co-stream for it. Who knows? Who knows, guys?
Who knows?
Who knows? Not officially announced, but yeah. All right. Well, then I'm going to take the opportunity. I'm not going to answer this question. I'm going to get answers from both of you, and I'll report back to the other podcast what you thought. Liquid or C9, Matt?
For what? Who wins?
For who wins?
No, between the two of them.
Yeah.
Okay, so Matt,
who goes deeper,
you know,
then,
no,
I guess.
Their tournament is called Valorant Champions.
Yeah, so it's not
like it's Liquid or C9 Blue is going to be champion, but it's like who's going to be the better of them at Valorant Champions. That's the question.
So you don't care if either of them is the champion then?
Well, I think the idea was to only nominate two teams in the 16 teams.
Look,
I did my research
here. I tried to find two teams of similarly equal skill, which would make the prediction more okay. I was going to do something with the Crazy Raccoons,
Josh,
but I couldn't find the shitty team.
Because Scream's brother has COVID, so he has to play from the hotel, right?
That's actually very, very up-to-date information. Yeah, that was literally just announced earlier today. Or not even announced, it was just reported earlier today.
So I would go with... not that team. I'd go with Cloud9.
You're going with Cloud9 because Nevera has tested positive for COVID and has to be quarantined? That's
a bit unlucky.
That's some advanced... That's like you're a fucking... You know the people that bet on esports that they've never even watched a game of, but they just bet based on like other things that they've heard from around the scene? I know that sounds mental, but it genuinely happens. There are people that bet on esports they've never watched, like teams that they've never watched, and somehow managed to be profitable doing it. That's what that reminds me of. You are just taking a punt based on a news article that you read this morning. But I appreciate it.
So are you impressed that I knew, though?
I am, actually. I really am.
Dude, he's on Twitter all day. What do you expect?
Yeah, he really is. He doesn't actually work for Blizzard. He just is on Twitter.
I just monitor Twitter, yeah.
Yeah.
Jonathan,
like,
who are you going
for?
I'm doing
work all the time. I'm working so hard. And all he's doing is like playing Overwatch.
And NBA 2K.
And NBA 2K.
And Halo.
While reading Twitter on the second monitor. I'm going to go with Liquid. I'm going to go the opposite of Matt's argument here, right here. I'm just going to be a European fanboy. I go with Liquid because they're European. Okay. You know,
I can
and they
tell
have
you,
Scream. The one taps. You know,
the
one taps. Yep.
They
we
know
like
him
one
for
taps.
His one tap. They know me for my one taps. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who would you go with?
The favorite is Liquid out of the two of them. So.
Oh.
You've made the correct choice, I think. You've conned. Although, I mean, Matt's got a decent point. Yeah, so that should be pretty fun. So that's what we're going to be doing over the next, I don't know, 15
maybe.
Days or something. So
maybe
it'll be a while. One more topic though before we get finished with this episode, which is IDK has retired. It feels like we're constantly talking about the Hangzhou Spark on a former Hangzhou Spark players these weeks. They also announced Neko as assistant coach, but I want to talk particularly just a little send off for IDK here because he's a player that's had. Some pretty big highs actually in the Overwatch scene. There was a time where people were rating him as one of the best main supports in the entire game. I believe he played for the Korean World Cup team, but that was also the one year that they lost, right? So maybe that's not the highlight of his career. I don't really know. Well, what do you got to say about IDK here?
I'll remember the first year of Hangzhou where he was really good. You know, that team looked pretty promising. I think after that, everything kind of went a little bit sideways for, you know, the team. And then by product him, where I still think a pretty talented player. Looks like he's going to go finish his military service, which seems to be, you know, what a few players I think have said this offseason. Where you never know. I mean, maybe he comes back eventually down the road, but if not, had a pretty good run.
Yeah. I got another wild take for you right here, Sideshow. It just never stops. It never stops with the ludicrous things bloody I say, hell. Okay? I feel like IDK, to me, he was a very interesting player naturally because of like how aggressive he was with Lucio. Like he was, you know, coming out on the scene initially, he was a bit of a bloodthirsty support, you know, very aggressively minded when he started out playing with Africa Freaks way back then, even. But I feel like when it comes to Korean main supports, he kind of fell somewhere below a tier between like Toby to Lee Jaegon. But like he wasn't quite on their level in terms of like how good he was as a main support and being that bloodthirsty support, having the impact on that game. Because Toby was obviously like massive, like one of the greatest main supports in Overwatch history. And then also you have Lee Jaegon, who's like been one of the best main supports now for like the past two, three years, right? In the Overwatch League. And I feel like IDK kind of like came in between these two, and then he was also like slightly worse. But when I think of Lee Jaegon, Toby, Korean main supports, IDK pops up because I think that he genuinely like was a really good player, really good main support, standout aggressive play style, really fun main support to watch. You know, some main supports can be quite boring, very like calm, you know, a bit more reserved, get good sound barrier, stuff like that out. I feel like IDK, he was just like a bit wild at some points in his career, which made for a fun main support to watch and follow. So I think that overall, you know, he's had a great career, didn't win as much as he perhaps wanted. But, you know, not everyone can win. But that being said, I think he's had a great career as a main support.
I think it's really interesting, the comparison you make to Toby and Lee Jaegon, actually, because the way that I think of IDK is that when you path out like the chronology of how the metagame for main supports developed, you started off with really passive main support players, like super passive at the very beginning of the game, I mean, and they were barely really doing anything.
Sit on the payload.
Yeah, Lucio was actually like payload duty and stuff like that. They weren't trying to get aggressive at all. And Toby and the other Korean main supports who were playing at the time really pioneered this way of trying to get more aggressive and doing more proactive things from the Lucio position. And I feel like IDK was one of the players that saw that group of people and thought, I can take it a step further. I can get even more value by being more aggressive than them. And yet, I think with the benefit of hindsight, one of the issues for IDK is that he didn't have the skill of a player like Lee Jaegon or FD God to be able to take that idea and really make it work. So he had like moments where he got big highlight plays, but he couldn't find the right timings and maybe didn't have as good mechanics as people like FD God and Lee Jaegon to be up at the absolute pinnacle of the game. But he was onto the right idea, and he was moving down the right path, but he was like taking an offshoot path, whereas the real end product for that aggressive style ended up being these fresh rookie talents that came into the league like a year after IDK, or maybe even two.
Yeah.
Was it two? No, a year after IDK, I guess.
It was a year.
Yeah, with like specifically Lee Jaegon and FD God, like who I think of as being the really aggressive Lucios. And IDK was trying to be that, but didn't quite have it and didn't have the same balance as somebody like a Moth or a Toby. So he's still a really interesting player that has his place in main support history, though, I think. Hi, we're back. Something weird happened there and OBS crashed, but I was essentially wrapping up my point on IDK anyway. I think it's kind of cute the way that he's put the send-off message as well. He's saying that he's big fans of all the people that have supported him over the time, and he's like cheering them on. And also he put, I guess the 1,677 days was how long he's been a pro player as well, which I think is, I think that's pretty cool. You know, it's always, no matter what he does in the future, I'm sure he'll always remember his time. And this applies to everybody. No matter what you do, I'm sure he'll remember his time fondly when he was playing professionally. Over time, all of the bad moments kind of blend away and you tend to only remember the good. At least that's how I think about things anyway. Is that how it works, Jonathan? Or are you still kept haunted at night?
Yeah. Jonathan never has any good moments. That's why he's just...
Siri was demanding all the pets.
Permanently haunted by the bat.
So I might have zoned out just petting my dog. I'm sorry.
That's perfect.
But I'm sure your point was fantastic about former players. And
It's
exactly like that. It was a question. It was a yes or no question, right? So I'll say yes.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you for your delightful input on this episode, as usual. All right, let's get to our final segment of the week.
He's just an idiot. I mean, Johnny's just stupid.
Okay, I'm sorry. Look, okay, my dog is a bit sick. Okay, we came home from vacation.
Oh, she's sick. What's wrong?
Yeah, she was at a doggy daycare for a week.
Yeah.
And I think she just caught like a cold or something from the other dogs. So she's feeling a bit ill. And so, Siri, you know, I'm giving you a little bit of pets, you know?
All right, well, she deserves it. She is a good girl.
Oh. Yes.
All right, well, let's do our Brens Player of the Week this week. Brens Player of the Week this week was a tough choice. It was a tough choice. It really was. But I think the spirit of Bren, I'm trying to channel the spirit of Bren here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it to the medical community. The medical community at large, but more specifically, the medical community looking after Zoe and Jacob after they had the car crash earlier this week.
Oh, jeez.
Because they were in a pretty nasty accident, actually. Zoe was tweeting about it afterwards and was talking to us about it, too. And they got straight up, like, what do they call it? T-boned by another car while they're making a turn. So... very, very grateful that Zoe and her husband were able to walk away from that one.
Yeah.
I mean, walk away in some level of pain, because I think Jacob, like, did his knee in a little bit. But overall, it seems like no permanent damage was done.
You're giving it to the medical community. I'm giving it to the car building community.
True, actually. Crumple zones.
The sick cars we have these days, like, they are really robust, that even like very harsh accidents, you know, the ugliest of accidents, you can get away relatively injury free because of how sturdy they are.
It's great, not just sturdiness.
Great job, car building.
They have
community.
Like they have built in zones that are designed to crumple and absorb energy and stop the energy from being passed to you.
We're talking about the video games.
Right? What about this? This is from the scientific community released today.
Okay, go on then. What is it?
U.S. scientists who created the first living robots, known as Xenobots, announced that they have made robots who can reproduce.
What?
In ways not seen in plants and animals.
What does that mean?
They're formed from the stem cells of African claw frog. And, these tiny blobs... they were experimented. They can move, work together in groups, and self-heal. And now they can reproduce.
In what way are they robots?
I don't fucking know.
I shouldn't ask you. You know nothing about it. You know, perhaps if I'd read this article, I'd be more inclined to believe you. But I feel like you've been suckered in by some fantastic clickbait there.
I don't
know the extent of it. So, anyway, this...
You know those...
Yeah,
you know those the Boston Dynamics robots they're making, guys. You know, you can actually buy one of those dogs now. They're called Spot. Yeah, the Boston Dynamics Spot.
How much is one of those?
Yes.
Okay, they've got to be an outrageous price
Is it six figures?
It's outrageous for a retail customer. It's not outrageous for a millionaire.
I don't think they would be six figures. I think they'd be high just underneath six figures. I think they'd be somewhere around like 80, 90K.
Matt?
I'm going to say 150K.
74,500,000.
I don't know what number
million.
That is.
That's $7 million for a dog.
74,000.
And people still listen to me. By God. 74,500. For a robot dog that you can control.
That's not bad.
Yeah,
that's not bad.
And it moves around. It can climb stairs. It's a robot dog. 74,000.
Do you think we can get a plot chat one?
What kind of money do you think we're making right now? What kind of money do you think we're making?
Wait, did he say 74,000 or 740,000?
No, 74,000. Yeah.
You got 74 grand lying around? Because if so, I want a piece of that, Matt.
Yeah, start fucking getting people watch Valorant. Go watch Champion.
Well, I want to finish this episode by saying that a certain Super TF approached us and had an idea that I wanted to run by you guys. So leave us a comment if you like the idea of this. Super was, he's a fan of Melee, and one of the things that has recently been done in Melee by somebody, I don't know, I don't follow the scene, was a top 100 of all time. So it was a list 100 to number one greatest of all time. And because we've got to the end of Overwatch 1, all of the tournaments in Overwatch 1 are now finished, they're done, and we have the full history there. Super suggested we do a 1 to 100, or maybe 1 to like 20 on each role or something. In some way, though, a rankings list of the greatest of all time players in Overwatch 1, which I think would be a banger of a list. Insanely difficult to create, though.
Very difficult. It would get mold inducing. The comments are going to get brutal. Yeah, I mean, yeah. We could totally do it, though. You know,
I think that's
terrible
good off-season
comments
content.
Haven't
if
stopped
we
us before.
Unveiled 10 every week, that'd be 10 weeks of content.
It really would. I mean, almost we wouldn't have time to be able to do that. Like, we'd actually have to do it faster than that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, we're certainly open to that idea if it tickles your pickle in the comments section. So drop us a comment, see if that floats your boat, and if it floats enough people's boats, we'll set out to sea. A lot of mixed metaphors.
We'll probably
there.
Do it anyway, even if you guys don't want. But it's good because to know if you guys want to do it or not.
Cock all else to talk about, isn't there? We will see you next week for episode 116. Goodbye.
Woo.